Good. Thanks.
Okay. Just see the little packet.
It's ready to accept things like that, the courage to choose things like that, and the wisdom to have.
Hi, my name is Laura Ann. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm seated with Kimberly, and we are co-leaders for this meeting. Each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares on the topic for 3 minutes. This session is being recorded. Okay, for speaker shares, that's me. My name is Laura Ann, still a compulsive overeater. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. Is that good? I came into program in 1978, I believe, so that makes me in here 47 years. My currently imperfect abstinence is 2 years, 6 months. I've had some slips, no sugar, and I get right back on my food plan. You know, that's life, things happen. My home group, we used to say that in other meetings, is the face-to-face Tuesday Brooklyn Heights Literature Meeting, Tuesday, 6:30. Come on by, we're awesome. Yay. my Zoom home meeting is a Bloomington, Indiana Literature Meeting, 8 a.m. on Thursdays. And I have a phone home meeting to the Unconventional Spirituality Meeting at 10 o'clock on Sundays. You want the links? Come on up after. I heard about OA in California. I was on a work term from college, and I had never heard the word binge uttered aloud. I didn't even know how to pronounce the word. It's kind of weird. But I had seen it. My dad's a mental health professional, and he had all these journals, and it was always associated at that time with anorexia, which they did not distinguish between bulimia and anorexia. I came in desperate to lose weight. Actually, my supervisor, 12-step movie, because I'd eaten myself out of the pants that I brought with me to California. I was like, oh, I have to contact my parents and ask them for more money to buy more jeans. I'm like, are you kidding? Yeah. And when I came in, there were 2 food plans, and I picked one and got going. I got back to New York, and I went to meetings, a lot of meetings. We're lucky enough that we had 2 locations where there were 3 meetings in the evening. You know, there was a regular, and different days of the week it was different formats, 6 o'clock, 7:30 beginners, and then 8 o'clock regular. So you could just plop yourself down in that room after work, you know, and just sit there and steep it in, you know. And that was I went to a lot of literature meetings. At that time we only had AA literature and a ton of pamphlets. And there was non-approved literature also on the literature table, no more. Thank goodness, we have our own stuff now. I've been through the mill. I've been in eating disorders rehab. I've been in a ton of therapy aftercare. I've had career issues. I have an outside, you know, issue diagnosis that I had to address, couple of them. I was very involved in Big Book recovery, and I just can't overemphasize the importance of the traditions. And I think it's really important that we study them and know them so that we know when we're in a safe place, and when traditions are being violated, it's not a safe situation. I've made a very, you know, enough said. I got into a very bad situation when I was at a meeting that was not the situation. So, I read the steps again on the plane, so I'm going to just do a little summary here. Step 8, it's more than just the food. You know, it's not just, you know, out of control food behavior and obsession, but we have other issues. I had a lot of pain over not being able to deal with other people. I related to that in the book, and ate a lot of times. Because I didn't know how to deal with it. Not only just facing it, but dealing with it. I didn't have the tools. You know, for me, a big piece of my recovery has been accepting people where they're at, who they are, and what their values are. My parents really didn't get me, you know, and you know, they loved me and they provided an amazing life for me. My family, I was the only compulsive overeater in my family. And nobody really, I really, like, the whole thing about eating a dessert and stopping, I like just didn't understand. Like it was like I always wanted more, 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 and they weren't like that. Big part of step 8, which I didn't say. Oh, I wanted to ask: are there any newcomers here? People new to OA or in their first 6 meetings, whatever? No. Okay. Good. The steps are in order for a reason, and if you're not on the 8th and 9th step, don't try not to feel intimidated. Work the step that you're on and move along until you get to those steps. It's really important that you have that foundation. Okay. So forgiveness and mercy, it's a big part of this step. I didn't say the step, which is step 8. Made a list of all persons, thank you, that we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And then step 9 is actually making amends to the people we have harmed, except when to do so would injure them or others. And so the word amend means to change, and we need to change how we deal with people, the people who share our lives. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. So part 1 is the list. And you have to really determine whether you've actually harmed somebody. To go up to say somebody and say, I've hated you all these years is not, that's not an amends. Like for me, the way I try to heal those relationships is I see them and I try to send good vibes. I have a lot of, forgiveness practices and there's prayers obviously in the big book and the OA book. And I have an outside prayer that I use that I'm happy to share with people if they want to afterwards. For me, perfectionism and being self-critical, I have to make amends to myself too. And working the program to work on my defects of character in 6 and 7 is a big, strong way that I do that. I've harmed myself with destructive thinking, eating, and food and living habits. It's about looking at our side of the relationship. The second part of the step is being willing to make amends for the harms that we've done. It's really important that you work closely with the sponsor, and I've over the years worked this step many times, which is why I went back to the book, because it's been a while and I'm really working on my ongoing amends at this point. I've made amends to everybody that I'm aware that I've harmed. And it's about being present for my husband and other behaviors that I am changing around my relationship. So it reminds us that we have to actually forgive the people who have harmed us, and who we've provided harm. Like, because it's, for example, one of the biggest amends has been with my parents, and it has been a long, slow process of forgiving them and accepting who they are, I went to another program for help with that, actually a couple of programs, and in the end, they passed away fairly recently, within 11 months of each other, and I just wanted a little more time with them, and I have the kind of phone where the pictures come up, and when I see them, it's like, I miss them, and it was, they did the best they could, and they were all imperfect people. Anyway, so we have to forgive people, and as I said, the harms sometimes go both ways. And if we don't, then we're in danger of making insincere amends. And for me, like just blurting out all the stuff that pissed me off too. And that's not what it's about. We're looking at our side of the street, our side of the conflict. So there's a lot of stuff about how to forgive. It's recommended that we write, which has always been a really good tool for me, to put a boundary around the resentments, it's venting on paper and then talking to a sponsor about it. That there's only so many harms, and not more. And the big point of these steps is we cannot skip these steps and have freedom from compulsive overeating. There's promises in both the big book and here. So in step 9, we actually take action. I love the language here. It talks about the quote, freedom for the shackles of compulsive eating. Because that is it. I was obsessed and compulsive and like if I wasn't actually eating the food, sometimes I was just like thinking about it, planning a binge, how am I not going to binge it? It was like craziness. When we make our amends, it's not just a vague statement, it's a simple wording, not loosely wording, but very specific. And I actually had a sponsor who had me write index cards of what I was going to say, not to use them to speak to the person, but to prepare and, you know, to say things out loud, you know, when I'm with myself and practice, you know, because I didn't want to mess it up. And I have to say, you know, the first time around, I didn't have a sponsor to really walk through it with. And I made some inappropriate amends, you know. Mending something is changing it. And when we can't find somebody, so I had this happen, thank you, somebody popped into my brain one day. I thought I made all my amends, and I Googled her, and I was shocked to find out she died in a car accident. And I was like, and, you know, what I did was I wrote a letter, and I went to a place that I know she loved. I live in Brooklyn, Greenwood Cemetery, and I found a nice tree to sit under, and I read it to her. And I did feel release. You know, in the obituary, they said where she would like donations sent, and part of the conflict that I had with her was about her husband. And so it was not appropriate for me to reach out to him. He didn't, you know, he pissed off at me, I'm sure. And it was not going to be a good situation, so I sent a donation, you know, and got a very nice thank you letter back. So there's some promises, even in our literature, that we're going to have spiritual awakening has become a reality. We're at peace with the world. We no longer need the crutch of excess food. We found a way of life that nourishes us physically and spiritually. You know, and the challenge is to continue this on a daily basis, the ongoing amends. It's not easy. You know, there's times when I'm not perfect at this. Spiritual principles of these steps are self-discipline, to work toward finishing and moving to the maintenance steps, and love for others is the ninth step one. You know, healing and living in reality, that's very big. Okay, let me see. My experience with it, I've worked these steps many times with different sponsors. I went to a recent step study where the focus was on changing attitudes, thoughts, and feelings, and that really was different for me. Acceptance and forgiveness has been huge. Challenges of working this step, the I don't want to. You know, having a busy sponsor, you know, if your sponsor's too busy, you're like, yeah, you have to make a time to talk to them. You know, like they can't drop everything and talk to you about your step work. But, you know, that if your sponsor's too busy, you need to find somebody to talk to about it. It's really inadvisable to do this without running the situation and what you're going to say past somebody who's in recovery, or at least familiar with the 12 steps. The rewards, for me, I'm trying to become the kind of person and wife that I want to be. You know, that I've done some harmful things with my husband. I've engaged in behavior that was very dismissive and mean and angry and, you know, like checking in with him, you know, and asking, how are you feeling today, you know, instead of like assuming, you know. There's a lot of stuff. I have all of the questions that I ask myself every night in my 10th step. You know, did I do this, did I do that? Checking off, where am I at with it? Let's see, how else do you work this step? Of course, the OA literature and AA literature and Big Book, but the AA and OA 12 and 12, a Big Book. And then in the back of the daily readers, both Voices and Recovery, and for today, they have indexes of title, you know, subject, so you can find more information there. Let's see. Yeah, I wrote it blowing up at my husband. That's another thing. Tools. How do you work the tools with this? You know, literature. I've been finding that I revisit when I do the step work with the sponsee, I read the literature again, and it's like revisiting the step. I also go over some assignments from a step study that I took. I work with a sponsor. I check in twice a week, and I have a sponsee. On the phone, I check in with my bestie, and I have two friends who know me very well. I do try to reach out to new people, but that's not my strength, I have to admit. And I'm careful, actually, not to share marital stuff with people who have been in negative or abusive relationships and who are not married, you know, because the kind of feedback that they can sometimes give has not been helpful to my marriage. I write when the feelings come up, go to meetings and share what's appropriate to share in a meeting. Service is another place to talk about, you know, steps 6, 7, and 8. And, you know, of course, staying abstinent. You know, it's really important to stay abstinent through all of this. So that's all I got. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kimberly. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Kimberly.
Nice to look out there and see you all. And I'm glad that you came to talk about steps 8 and 9 and their spiritual principles of self-discipline and love. First of all, I'll give you a little background. I was fat to obese my whole life. I actually have a picture of me as a toddler in a diaper, topless. I don't know how old I was, but I must have been just learning to walk. I was going to say drive, learning to walk, and because I look a little off, you know. And the rolls of fat in the arms and the belly and the legs are sad, but I've been in what I always thought, a compulsive overeater since my whole life. I've lost my highest weight was well over 205, 210 pounds. I stopped weighing, because why bother, right? It was just, the real question was, what clothes fit the least badly? I came to OA in May of 1986, when I lived in Paris, France. And I've been abstinent since September of 1986. And I have an app that tells me, I just love saying this, it's 14,294 days. Yes. Not for the day count, but before the crazy brain who went to all the trouble to figure it out. And I'm maintaining a weight loss of 65 pounds. I really stopped weighing myself. I had, right before I left for college, I got on a diet plan, followed it, lost weight, went to college in a size 14 in October, and by the time I came home for Christmas, none of my clothes fit. And it's just was up from then until in 1986, I heard about this thing called Overeaters Anonymous. Now, I would love to tell you my story. What do they say? I'm not much, but I'm all I think about, right? So, but I want to talk about the topic and the basic fact. The short version is I owe my recovery to all of the steps as communicated in the big book, in the AA 12 and 12, which is what I had when I got started, and the addition of the OA 12 and 12. I can still remember when I got the OA 12, where I was in the Friday night meeting in Connecticut I went to. So we're talking about steps 8 and 9, and the first thing I have to say, so I get step 9 is love, but step 8, it says it's discipline. Now, they didn't ask me. I don't really think that I like self-discipline as a spiritual principle. It sounds like willpower, and I know how willpower got me, not much. I think the spiritual principle of step 8 should be willingness, but I love willingness. It's very important to my recovery, and somebody's going to say, no, willingness was already taken, yeah. Well, I think willingness is important enough they could have used it twice, but I wasn't on that committee. Willingness and self-discipline kind of go hand in hand. So I'm just going to pretend like I was willing and I had God discipline, away discipline, to help me. The thing that I do like about self-discipline is that I can become, and willingness, where they say, I can be willing to do something I don't want to do, right? I wouldn't be in recovery. Who wants to weigh and measure their food when they're new in OA or when their clothes start fitting again, right? Nobody. Nobody wants to. But I was willing to do what they told me to do. And I have much later this slogan that says, it doesn't matter what I think, it only matters what I do. And that's very important to me because I can definitely be willing to do things that I don't want to do. And I've decided that even though I'm not going to talk about willingness, that really gets you into self-discipline. Being willing to do something I don't want to do is self-discipline. So I did what they told me to do. I didn't think I was going to be here this long, right? This was not Kimberly's plan. But I was fat. I couldn't buy clothes in the city of Paris. And I was going to come to OA and do what they told me to do. And then when I left, the plan, when I got thin, the plan was I was going to leave and I'd see you over at the pâtisserie shop, you know, which is sweets. If you don't know what pâtisseries are, they're just sweet poison. So I became willing and became self-disciplined by taking action. I worked on step 1, 2, and 3, taking it a day at a time and a step in time. I didn't mean to develop faith, but someplace in there, faith entered my life as I took the actions. And I did the personal inventory with all those scary things. I told 1.5 sponsors my fifth step story. That's a different qualification. And I could say now, I guess having done all that, it doesn't matter if it's surrender or willingness or self-discipline. All that matters is that I did what the book and my sponsors told me to do. And I cooperated with God in letting go of my character defects, or in some cases, in acting as if I let go of my character defects. Making a list of people I've harmed is much easier, thanks to the work I had done beforehand. And then doing the work around the 4th and 5th step list, continuing through 6 and 7, I could begin to see the miracle of recovery happening in my life. And I will say that God blessed me with willingness to stop arguing about willingness and to keep going, make a list of the people I had harmed and how I had harmed each of them. And then when I was putting my thoughts together, I thought, boy, that really is self-discipline. You know, it's one thing to tell one person about my faults and who I had hurt. But doing that and not knowing where that would go, and maybe there was a self-discipline bent or storyline through step 8. So my sponsor told me to write a list of institutions and people I had harmed and to pray for the willingness to make amends. She told me to go back through my life with thoroughness and honesty and to stop arguing about which spiritual principle is it. Just do it. She gave me a formula that I should use about when I did blank, I harmed you, and then I might ask, okay, make amends, or I'd like to make amends, and this is what I'd like to do to make amends, or how can I make it right to stop over complicating things. She reminded me that I could pray for someone who has hurt my feelings or who has wronged me, and that opens my heart to love, or at least starts to push the door to love open. She told me I could make a list of things that I want for myself. Oh, this is just such a beautiful thing. And pray for the other person to have the things I want for myself. And that would open my hearts to love. And that I could ask for willingness. And that's willingness here was self-centeredness, self-discipline that comes from love. And it was amazing to me how it all kind of fit together. I don't know if it sounds as, to me, it was enormous. It doesn't sound as enormous as I say it. And so on my ninth step list, I had a lot of it after having written my fourth step and done my fifth step. I had not maybe everything. But the OA 12 and 12 says the purpose of the ninth step is to clear away guilt and ill will that interferes with good relationships with people. She and the OA 12 and 12 told me to acknowledge the specific harm I'd done, apologize, and make appropriate restitution, and change my behavior toward the person in the future, which opens my heart to show love. The book says on page 65 that to amend something means to change it. I asked God to help me to look for ways to change my self-seeking behavior, and I was rewarded with guidance. Sometimes my God, my higher power, would give me just a gentle prompting or an idea would flow through my brain like this, and I'd have to go catch it because it was what I needed to hear. And I'm not going to read them now. In the last four paragraphs of step nine in our OA 12 and 12 are full of promises that will come true to us when we do what we can do to square things with the people we've harmed. So I wanted to make this real and tell you a little bit, give you two examples if you have time, of my step eight and nine journey. And both, strangely, are with my parents. So as a young person, I had a stereotypical relationship with my mother. Sometimes I thought she was wonderful. Sometimes I thought she was not wonderful. There we go. I could deal with her nicely, and sometimes she just annoyed my last nerve. I wasn't an awful daughter, but I didn't think once I got started working on the steps that I was all that good a daughter. And at this point, she lived in California and I lived in New York, and she was coming to visit, and I was not looking forward to it because I felt very, very anxious. And I prayed and prayed and prayed for God to show me how to act. God and I created a plan, and that was, you know, what are some things she would like to do? And I did not like to go shopping with her because she wanted to buy all of this stuff that I didn't like. And that was it should be great, right? Losing opposition. So I prayed. I went shopping. God said, go shopping with your mom. You don't have to buy anything. And we didn't buy anything. We looked at the curtains. We looked at the bedspreads. We looked at looked at the toilet paper. Maybe not the toilet paper. We looked at all this stuff. And it was like nails on a chalkboard. But I kept asking God to take it away and let me show up as a human being to a woman who was delighted to see me, even if I was a young person who wanted to do things my way. I did it her way. And if I got upset, I prayed, God, please sit on my tongue. It's a lovely prayer. And I could picture God sitting on my tongue and the little feet coming out and tapping my tongue. It's a very good story, right? So, God, please take away my frustration. Let me act like a normal human being. I didn't know how to act like a normal human being. And, I was acting inside. I felt like a 13-year-old. Like, you bitch, you're taking me to buy stuff for me? We didn't buy anything. We got back to our apartment that night. And she thanked me with tears in her eyes for such a lovely mother-daughter day. And I was so grateful. I was so grateful because she didn't know how I felt. She knew how I acted. And because of that, she felt the way I wanted her to feel, and I didn't know if I would be able to do it. So that's one benefit of steps eight and nine. I could take that with me. So My parents were divorced, and that makes it fairly ironic that my other step 8 and 9 story is with my dad. My dad was, he wasn't a great dad. I have written in here he wasn't a bad dad, but I don't know. He could go for years without calling me, or, you know, maybe he never hurt me physically. He never intended to hurt me emotionally. He just wasn't around. And, you know, being in prison, part of it was probably a good reason. I didn't know that at the time. But anyway, I'm going to take his inventory. But I can tell you, what I resented, oh my gosh, is longer than 5 minutes. What I resented was he never called, he never sent a postcard, he never sent a birthday card. And I just felt like he didn't try very hard. So guess who, you know, was the last person on my inventory list? It was my dad. And I saw that what I resented him for most was his absence. And then I thought, well, you know, Kimberly, you've been kind of absent too. You haven't tried very hard at all. You're not really a good daughter any more than he's a good dad. And so the question was, what would a good daughter do? Well, this is as much willingness as I had, I'm ashamed to say. A good daughter, if I were in fit spiritual condition, I would call for either Christmas or his birthday, beginning of December birthday or Christmas. I could send him a happy birthday card. And so every year until he died 30 some odd years into my recovery, I sent a Father's Day card, I sent a birthday card, and I sent a Christmas card. And some years there were loving, kind, or like funny that he would like. And some years it was to whom it may concern, happy birthday. It depended on me. I thought it was on him. I thought it was piss poor making amends, but it was really literally what I could do. And fast forward, the reality hits the fan. So one day my dad collapsed, got taken to the hospital, and the next thing you know, he was in a vegetative state for 5 years. And Kimberly, without my pitiful fifth step, might not have made it. I was so ashamed at that point of my fifth steps, or my 10th step, 9th steps, whatever, 9th steps, there we go. I was so ashamed by the pettiness of my amends. And my stepdaughter, I got to the hospital, my stepmother said to me, "Oh, he loved hearing from you so much. He always knew he would hear from you on his birthday. He always looked forward to hearing from you on Christmas. He always loved your Father's Day cards." She told me that one year I was in really good recovery and I got this giant card for his birthday, I guess. You know, a cute, funny, giant card. He took it to work and showed it to all of the other guys. And she told me that, and then for 5 years, we lived on the opposite side of the country. I would go 2 or 3 times a year. Every time I saw her, every time I called her, which was not much, she told me how much he loved those cards. And I can't believe that it took a little self-discipline because I couldn't quite get rid of the resentment. And I got this gift that said, "You did the best you could, and it was good enough. Sometimes good enough is good enough." So all I can say is that my nose is running, probably too many details for the people on the recording, sorry. Is that steps 8 and 9 and the spirituals of self-discipline and love saved me during those 5 years of grief, and then in the many years, abstinence. And it did take self-discipline to make those calls sometimes, or to buy the card, or to buy the nicer card. Do I have to? Yes. Right? It took a lot of love, a lot of self-discipline, and what I know is that carries over into all areas of my life. You know, gratefully, most areas of my life aren't that big. I mean, that's big. And it took a lot of years to get there, But I did the work, and then God did for me what I could not do for myself. And steps 8 and 9 are a huge part of that. So thank you. Okay, so the topic of the workshop is steps 8 and 9, and the session is being recorded. The workshop will end at what time? Who can tell me what time we end? The workshop will end at 3:45, so we have time for 3-minute pitches from the floor. The timer is, who's the timer? Okay, so raise your hand so they know where you are when you get up here. Okay, right on the aisle, and she will signal you when you have 1 minute left. If you would like to share, you can form a line at the front of the room. We remind you that this session is being recorded, in case you didn't remember, and your sharing demonstrates your consent to be recorded. If you wish to remain anonymous, please use a fictitious name or choose not to share. Meeting open for sharing. Who wants to share? Who wants to recover? Come on up. Come on up.
Hi, I'm Judy, a compulsive overeater from Buffalo, New York. And I'm happy to be here. And I think this is an interesting topic for me because I am sponsoring someone who is going through the steps formally for the very first time. And as she is now going through her 8th and 9th step and working with her day by day, it is fresh for me. And it is just such a privilege to see the miraculous happen in someone else's life. And, you know, why do we sponsor? We give it away so we can keep it. And so I just want to encourage everyone out there, if you're not sponsoring and you're able to sponsor, to consider sponsoring, because it's just such a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Liz E., and I live just a couple hours away. Hi. And, gosh, steps 8 and 9. I mean, I had to go through all those other steps before I got there, and there was a reason. When I did my 5th step, after I read my 5th step, my sponsor said, well, you've got your list. So I had all sorts of people on my list that I really didn't owe an amends to, people that I had a resentment towards. It was very appropriate. I had a resentment toward them, but I really didn't harm them. Well, I was real new at this stuff, so that completely perplexed me. And then I would talk about, you know, the amends that I made, and she'd be like, why do you owe that person an amends? You didn't do harm. So I appreciate our speakers, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, it has been pointed out that step 8 is a specific step. You need to sit down and think about things and do I owe amends. It's not just everyone on my, you know, 4th and 5th step that I'm resentful at, because there's a good reason to be resentful. So that was something that, you know, that was kind of a challenge for me. But, you know, looking at that list and doing the step 9, oh gosh, I had to look people in the eye that I had harmed, and I am like so people pleasing and afraid of conflict and didn't want to be vulnerable, didn't, you know, want to set myself up to be told something about myself that I just didn't want to hear. That was hard. But you know what? Facing that fear and looking people in the eye, I am such a stronger, braver person because of that. And I'm not shackled by things like I used to be because I've done that fearless thing. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Faye, compulsive overeater from Toronto.
Hi.
And thank you so much, both of you. it was wonderful to sit and listen and to remember those momentous days of step 8 and 9. I lost my daughter to suicide during COVID, and it's the kind of grief that maybe is a little bit different from other griefs because it leaves one with so many unanswered questions. And for me, that meant a lot of shame and guilt. And when it came to writing an amends to her, I wrote her. And I did, I guess, as I probably a fifth step as well, because I asked my brother, who is also in recovery, to come to Laura's memorial with me and to hold up a full-size picture of her on my iPad. And I read the letter of amends so that for the first time Phil was hearing it as well. It was hard and there were lots of tears, but it brought wonderful relief. And I looked at how can I make amends? She's gone. Because of abuse issues in my own childhood, I learned how to dissociate very well from my own pain. And as an adult, I continued that by dissociating from others' pain. And so I knew that what I had lived as a parent had big gaps in it. So I looked at how I could make amends, one of them was to be different with the children I had left. My three beautiful children and grandchildren. And the other thing was her memorial was a little glass cubicle at the very top of a tall column that seemed so sterile to me. Couldn't leave a stone, couldn't go and visit her and leave anything to say I've been here. But I was able to discover, because it was no little vase that you could attach to the glass, it was just pure glass, with her name on the inside. And I found that they had a little metal flower stuck at the corner of the window. She was at the top, the next one be a little flower, and that I could strip off the plastic on artificial flowers and or the tape, and that piece of wire would fit down into that little slot and hold up flowers at her memorial. And those flowers, as I go, not always monthly, but often within, certainly several times a year and sometimes once a month. And as I prepare the flowers, there's always a sense of connectedness to her, and the amends continues. So thank you for listening, and thank you again for sharing.
Oh, hi, good afternoon. My name is Nancy H. I come from Rhode Island in the USA. And hi, everyone, and thanks for all of you. And it's the second workshop I've heard. I never heard this before, to ask God to sit on my tongue. And I really like that. Boy. So I think of my older brother. My older brother is 85, and he lives in Arizona now. And I'm 76, and he had a different mother. His mother died like 2 weeks after he was born, so I was the first of my mother's. She had three, and I think from a very young age, I didn't realize I resented him, but he was like a problematic. I think he had a learning disability, and back then it wasn't diagnosed, but he was like kind of wild and crazy, and he always demanded a lot of attention. So I was the first of my mother, but he had a lot of my mother's attention. And as into adulthood, I had tremendous resentments towards him. He was very manipulative. I could just take a big long laundry list of his character defects, including being on an opposite political framework than I am. I didn't feel like I needed to make directness to him, but what I needed to do in my heart is forgive him and have a living amends to my brother. His name is Steve. And today, I feel like I truly have forgiven him in my heart. And he calls often. I love talking to him because we usually want to get off the phone within 3 minutes. 3 to 4 minutes. He gets right to the point, doesn't say much. But we have always a good 1 minute left, thank you. Good conversation, and we tell each other we love each other, and I feel so grateful for the steps and that I was able to have a good loving relationship with him now. Because at one time I used to think, what are we ever going to say about him when he dies? I mean, what did he do that was any good? But that's not true. I can see how a lot of people just love my brother. He's a lot of fun. And I got a phone call from him last week saying that he's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He seems fine right now, but, you know, and then I have a younger brother, actually, who had a slight heart attack. He called me the day after to say he was in the hospital. So anyways, it was kind of rough, but I'm grateful for both of them, and I'm grateful for the steps and that I can learn how to change and, you know, hopefully please my higher power. So that's it, thanks.
Hi, I'm Stephanie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm in from Florida, and I love the opportunity to share how I moved. Though I'm very shy, so thank you, Jan, new friend. But I wanted to share on steps 8 and 9 as it relates to my most recent amends that I needed to make that I did, which was to my child. My child is 11 years old, and I think that this is something that maybe underestimated the power of owning mistakes with children. It gave me an opportunity to kind of, it was more cathartic than I thought it would be, because I got to give him something that maybe I would have wanted the respect of as a child, right? So there was some healing in it that I didn't expect. So little background on him. He is 11 years old. He is very bright, very perceptive. He is an Olympic weightlifter. He's been doing weightlifting since he was 4 years old with PVC pipes, so nobody worry about his ligaments. He's watched by a doctor that does it properly with him and an adolescent weightlifting coach that goes to the Olympics, which is exciting. But anyway, this little niche gym that we go to has my son has been doing this since he was very, very young, and everybody there does strongman, Olympic weightlifting, or powerlifting, which are niche skills and unique things. They're all his uncles, big, burly dude uncles, right? And it's hilarious because, I mean, over 8 years, you know, they're constantly razzing each other. He gets a taste of a locker room vibe, I guess, and these guys are maybe in their 20s all the way up to 50s. And they were bragging about dating, not crassly or disrespectfully, but just, oh, we're not addicted to that, normal stuff every week. And I know these people well. They're in my home. The gym is our church in a lot of ways. This is what happened. As they were bragging, I teed it up for my son and said, well, you guys, there are these two little girls on bicycles that drive up and down our block looking for Jack, thinking that it would make him feel cool. I was wrong. That humiliated him. He has one foot in rubbernecking at women and the other foot in, ooh, they have cooties. And I overstepped. And we got in the car because I have the relationship with him that I've worked for. He said, what the hell, Mom? And I was able to say, how many 11-year-old boys have I raised? How many 11-year-old boys have I been? I am very, very sorry. I will never offer up personal information of yours without asking your permission if I feel like I think that it's apropos. And he forgave me, and I lived to tell the tale.
My name is Jimmy. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm AKA Quiet Man. That was my nickname. And I was going to use it up here, Quiet Man. But I'm going to talk about something that happened today, because I don't have 3 minutes to talk about my 70 years of life. In a short few years, 3 years, an accident, over 3 years, I don't have the time to tell you that I have been catapulted into the fourth dimension. And that involves a lot of detailed discussion. So today, my friend Nancy said, I'm going to go get some ice. Okay. And I continued to play my guitar. And quickly she came back, no ice. I didn't check downstairs. We're on the 23rd floor. And I didn't check. Maybe there's ice on the 22nd floor. So I kept quiet. Now my mind is rolling. And this is what I wanted to say to her. Well, why didn't you check? Why didn't you call? Why didn't you go down yourself? What's the matter with you? You've got 2 legs. You can walk 4 miles. This is all going up here. And then I had to think about it. Jimmy, get off your ass and go find the ice. Do something. That's your will. So what I did was, after about an hour, I grabbed the ice bucket. We're going. He says, I'm going to find ice. And that's what I did. I checked the 23rd floor, and I understood what she was talking about. Then I took the exit stairway, 22, 21, 20. And something dawned on me. Jimmy, you were looking for exercise today. Well, you're going to get it. 20, 19, 18, 17. No ice. Fourth floor. And there it is. I filled it up. I didn't have resentment. 1 minute. Thank you very much. I filled it up, got on the elevator. The next floor up was 5. And this tall gentleman stood up. And I said, I just got some ice on the fourth floor. And then he pointed over to the card with all the restaurants on it. And right on the bottom, it said, ice, fourth floor, 10th floor, 22nd floor. And I just walked all the way down. And I said, Jimmy, you know, you didn't read either. You had to do that. So the moral of the story is take the time to read. And I walked in and I gave her the ice. Thank you.
Thank you. My name's Irene. I'm a compulsive overeater. I just want to thank both speakers for your experience, strength, and hope. I thought I was going to the 100 Pounders meeting. I'm saying that I have learned in this program, not only was I in the wrong meeting, but I volunteered to time. So I was locked in. So my prayer was, God, please let me hear what it is that you want me to hear, because I'm here now. I wanted to share one of the miracles of the ninth step. I was very active in my addiction in my 20s when I lost my father, and I was in denial when he was dying. He died pretty suddenly. He was ill for just a month. And I was around, but I wasn't present. And I worked with a very loving, caring sponsor, and I spoke over him where he was buried, and I worked some different steps, and I was looking for peace. In that process with my sponsor, I made the realization that my mother was alone during this time. She was not on my list. She needed a daughter during that time because she was not in denial. And this process walked me to that process, and I was able to work with my sponsor and to sit down with this very gritty Eastern European who kept batting me away when I tried to tell her, but I know that it landed well and that she needed to hear it. She was alone during that time, but I didn't notice that because I was in my addiction. So this is that onion that we talk about, and that realization came years after my amends. So these steps are something that are active in my life, and I just have to get active in the work. Thank you.
All right.
Thank
you. Last call. Hi, I'm Jane from New Hampshire.
Hi.
I just want to say I love that I walked into this room, and because I heard something that's been, you know, going over in my head. My whole family had fallen out with my younger brother, and nobody to this day speaks to him except for me. And it's because of this program helped me to make the kind of living amends that I can make. And I always just feel like it wasn't good enough. But hearing, that's what I do now, is I started out by sending cards on a birthday and a Christmas, even though there were none coming back and nobody else was. I couldn't invite him to, you know, my daughter invited him to her wedding and things like that. But the point is, today I do see him. And we do get together a couple of times, and I accept him for who he is. He has every right to be who he is. But I don't have to beat myself up that that's the best I can do. But there's still a lot of hurt and, things. I don't want to say I'm in resentment anymore. However, I just feel like I got permission that what I'm doing is good enough, and God's okay with that, and I'm okay with that, and we at least have some relationship that the rest of my family is missing out on, because he has, you know, children and grandchildren, and I get to meet them and be with them and experience the wonderful people they are. So anyway, I want to appreciate your share, because it meant a lot to me today, so thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. That's all the time we have for sharing. Thanks for attending the workshop. And let's close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. All right. Thank you.